Hello and welcome to We Heard Wonders, the music podcast that's simple and dumb and is not the pilot.
That's got to be one of the most convoluted intros yet.
It's not good. Well, we were going to say it's Britney Bitch, but then you were like, I think we've done that one before. So we just, you know, we have principles, I guess. So we try the new one.
It sounds like something that we would have done before.
How you doing, man?
Yes, I am well. How are you getting on this week?
I'm very well. I'm aided and abetted in my podcasting efforts by your now ever-present dressing gown during these sessions, which I enjoy very much. For those of you who are just listening, which is everyone, since this is an audio podcast, it's grey and toweling and rather wonderful.
I thank you. Yep. I'm luxuriating in my podcast layer.
I was going to say, is it a studio?
Yeah, no. Leo sounds a little bit seedy, doesn't it? But it's more of a layer than a studio. I don't know if you can see. Actually, in the background, I've got loads of boxes here.
Yeah.
Because I'm moving again, or I'm moving my records again. So moving house in a couple of weeks, and I'm boxing them up. I'm about halfway through, and it makes you think like, why do I do this? Why do I do this record collecting business?
Do you know, Andrew, probably other people in your life, probably quite close to you, say that more than you say that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Like, what's this all about?
I'm definitely not moving again in the foreseeable future.
That's it. Yeah. I can see a couple of McCain home chips boxes, cardboard boxes there for a rather large number of oven chips. And I'm just wondering, have you put away all those oven chips, or are these boxes of yours?
Just boxes of your, yeah, absolutely. Classic moving materials. But yeah, I'm running low though. I could do with some eating some more oven chips, so give me some more boxes. I'm about halfway through, and it's a big task. There's about 20 boxes there, and I'm about halfway through.
Get those boys up a bit, man. They'll be munching the oven chips like nobody's bloody business, man. Maybe just kind of keep them up in oven chips. I always, just talking about my background in my podcast lounge, I'll call it. I every week reassure Andrew that it's not the same washing that's behind me. It's like it's a different set. This week I can confidently say that's the case. It's not always the case, but you know, that's life, innit? Wanes and stuff. It's a good week to be back podcasting, I think. Back at it again. And you have brought in a very geographically eclectic, if nothing else, selection of tunes this week. So some interesting stuff up on the slate.
Definitely. It wasn't deliberately done that way, but I noticed that once I compiled the five tracks, that there's five tracks, four continents involved here. So yeah, so you're right. It's geographically eclectic and musically all over the map as well.
Yeah, when you text me that, I almost replied instantly with, why only four continents? But then I just thought it was really snidey, so...
Once you've gone that far, you should probably just do five and five, shouldn't you? But never mind.
What's our missing continent? What have we not got?
Well, there's a few. We've not got Asia. We've not got South America. It's maybe one of our that we haven't got.
Pangaea. I just made that one up. That's not an actual continent. That's a supercontinent. Anyway, okay, so we've got some interesting stuff on the slate this week. Let's just quickly introduce ourselves, and then let's just get on with it, shall we?
Yep, absolutely. So my name is Andrew. I buy records and write about them on Instagram at kidagh86.
Andrew's Instagram is the best Instagram, is the purest Instagram, I would say. My name's Ian. I'm in Glasgow band The Deadline Shakes, and you can find us on all the social media platforms at Deadline Shakes. Lovely stuff. So it's been a busy couple of weeks in our lives, hasn't it? You're getting ready to move. I've been doing things, you know, doing stuff, keep myself busy. It's nice to sit down on my chair and listen to some music with you, Andrew. What's up first?
Always, man, always. Yeah, so we've got five new tracks this week from late Amazon D'Afrique, Brittany Howard, Dina Ogan, Granddaddy, and Yorinda. So yeah, so yeah, geographically all over the map, there's going to be some really dodgy pronunciation. I just apologise in advance for that.
I thought the Le Amazon d'Afrique there was pretty good.
We flourish there.
Oh, well. Right, okay. I mean, I'm not much better than you are. I don't know why I like have so assume moral authority on this. I'm terrible at it. Right, this first track is I'm just going to come around and say it's banger, right? So let's just listen to it right now. Don't want to wait any longer.
Who's it so by?
This would be Le Amazon d'Afrique, I believe. I put on a French accent there, so don't know if that'll help or not. Right, should we give it a bash? This is Musau Dance. Musau dance.
So yeah, it means woman's dance in African.
Okay. All right. Let's go for it. You're not gonna hear a more high energy piece of music anywhere this week as Musau Dance by Le Amazon d'Afrique. That is a banger. That's how I described it before, and that's what I'm sticking with. What say you?
Yeah, can't say fairer than that. Yeah, as soon as I heard this track, it had to be the opener this week. Just as you say, high energy, just brings the party. Anxiety, yep. Energy. Love it.
So the lyrics are like a sort of female empowerment vibe. Is that's where they're going there? I mean, I know neither of us speak any of the variety of African languages that are spoken on that track there, but one of the lyrics I found was "African women rise up," which I think may be the chorus line.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to find the full translation of it. I couldn't find it, but sadly to no avail. But yeah, it's you could even though you don't know what it is, you can tell that it's very kind of empowering,
yeah,
and righteous, and yeah, just life affirming, I think.
Yeah.
So Les Amazons d'Afrique are a contemporary world music supergroup collective. So they formed in Mali in 2015, and they featured various African luminaries over time. Mm-hmm. So previous members have included Angelique Kidja, Miriam from Amadou and Miriam, and as well as Rokia Kony as well. They're some of the previous ones that people may have heard of before. And yeah, as I say, it's like kind of like a kind of amorphous collective that's kind of changing over time. They are named after a female elephant hunting group and military regiment from the 17th century. It had this kind of cultural significance to them. And this is the opening track of their third studio record that's just been released. This is the title track, Musso Dance. And it's released on the Real World Records, which release a lot of this really cool international stuff. It was produced by Jack Knife Lee, who's kind of best known for his work with U2, REM, as well as Snow Patrol. So he's somebody who I've kind of struggled with in the past in terms of his production. He's got this very kind of distinctive, very bright, very big, almost this kind of obtrusive gleam to everything that he does. It's just everything's designed to kind of pop on the radio. And I find it a bit much in general, but I think it kind of works here because they're going for that kind of 80s electro vibe. I think it kind of works.
I think the whole composition of this is just it's like a mishmash of things, isn't it? You've got like sort of traditional African harmonizing, and then you've got this sort of ultra modern, like synthy, you know, glitchy kind of bass sound. And then, like you say, big bass beats over the top of it as well. So it is a sort of a blend of a variety of different things. But I think it comes together quite well.
It does, it does. So Jack Knife Lee had done a record with Rokia Kony in 2022, which was a really cool record. And I think this is just a kind of like a continuation of that, really.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think you're right. It does all come together. The verses are solid, I would say. Just kind of plenty of bass and nice synth runs. Very cool kind of vocal gesticulations all the way through, like the whoops and the hollows and things like that are really cool. But yeah, it's all about that chorus for me. It's just a kind of jubilant energy rush of a chorus.
Yeah.
That just works every time that it comes back in. In terms of the album, it's a decent album, I'd say. I think it gets a little bit exhausting listening to it. Oh my God, I don't know if that is least production for me or if it's just a bit too much of a good thing, maybe. But and I think because this is the title track and the opening track, it kind of sets a standard and sets a tone that never quite reaches those heights again for me,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
But if you're in the mood for something that's going to put a spring in your step, you should definitely check this album out. Me and my sons had a really good time just kind of dancing around the living room to this at the weekend. and that chorus was just sending them a bit cock-a-hoop. They were just jumping for joy. So that was a cool moment for us this weekend.
The lads are all about the female empowerment as they bop about the living room, I think. Good for them. Yeah, so it's like I said, it's four African languages that I've been reading about here. Bambara, Fon, Beti, and Muri appear to be the languages. So I think a translation might be tricky. But it's clear enough what they're all about. A shout out to the record sleeve as well. The record sleeve reminds me a little bit of Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, or like the Beatles For Sale. You know, the sort of four portraits. But this one is like obviously a bit different from those, because it features these like sort of really like lavishly dressed, like lavish jewelry, of the four ladies in the front cover, and it just works, and they just look like they do look like a super group. I think it does have that kind of like edge of you know, glamour and fun and stuff as well. So yeah, I love the whole package. The whole thing is just great as far as I'm concerned. Well done, good selection. Definitely. Good selection. So what now?
So next up, we've got the return of Brittany Howard, probably best known for her work with Alabama Shakes, as well as playing bass in Thunder Bitch, the brilliantly titled Thunder Bitch.
Right.
This is her just released second solo record that's been getting really good reviews.
Yeah.
And with good reason, I would suggest.
Yeah. Well, let's have a listen to it. You didn't pick up on my very clever joke when I said, "What now?" Because that is, of course, the name of the record. Or maybe you did, and it was just so shit you just decided not to pick me up on it.
Don't worry, I clocked it, but I was just being smoothie.
He's like, "Oh, just let that one slide past very slowly there." Okay, so it's Brittany Howard with "What Now." Okay, so we got the fantastic Brittany Howard with What Now There from the album of the same name. Some bells ringing behind me here. I'm going to just resolutely continue. And they're gone. Okay, so I like that, but I like that with some reservation. I have a few reservations, but maybe if you give us the shakedown of what we need to know about Brittany first.
Yeah, no worries. So as I was saying, she's an American musician from Athens, Alabama. Best known for being the lead vocalist, rhythm guitarist, and primary songwriter of Alabama Shakes. And yeah, this is her second solo record. Her mum is white of English and Irish ancestry, and her father is African-American. They grew up in a junkyard that was once burned down due to a lightning strike. She learned to write poetry and play the piano from her older sister, Jamie, who died from retinoblastoma in 1998. So that's things that she kind of explored on her previous solo record, which was a really cool record, I thought, called Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie.
That album was quite a kind of a rough and raw record for her, and she was doing a lot of kind of experimentation in terms of the production. It was a self-produced record, and she was kind of more interested in kind of groove and feel than maybe kind of polished tracks, if you like. And there was kind of the kind of muffled, pressed against the mic quality to it. And she did this really kind of cool thing where she was mixing instruments at different volumes and that kind of thing. And it was just kind of continuing what I thought was really cool about the Alabama Shakes second record, which is called Sound and Colour, which really kind of broadened out the palette of what they were doing. Because I don't know if you remember like the hype around Alabama Shakes when they first came out.
There was
a lot of people like saying, you know, that they're the best American band since the Strokes and that kind of thing. And there was a lot of kind of clamour for them at the time, even before they had an album out. And I think when the album came out, it had... The first album had good songs on it, but it was very, very retro in terms of its presentation and production and everything. Whereas I thought the second record was just a lot more kind of colourful and a lot more interesting. And then I think, yeah, she took that into her solo career as well. But that album, Jamie, it was really kind of candid as well in terms of the way that she was talking about her family, her sexuality, her relationship with God. There was this pretty incredible track called Goathead, where she was kind of telling this harrowing true story wherein her dad, who was a black man in a relationship with a white woman in Alabama, returned to his car to find the tire slashed and the goat's head on the back seat. And it was just this kind of, yeah, really kind of harrowing, stark.
Yeah.
Piece of music. It was almost played like poetry or reportage rather than a song. And it was incredible. So I don't think there's anything that kind of goes into that kind of detail in terms of like kind of autobiographical nature on this album. It's a little bit maybe kind of more universal or maybe a bit more abstract sometimes as well in terms of the way she kind of deals with things that have clearly gone on in her life in the last kind of couple of years apart, kind of talking about like relationships and acceptance and that kind of thing. But I think this new one continues that idea of being quite eclectic in terms of the influences and bringing in a lot of tones on the palette. So you've got like psychedelia in here, dirty funk, hair rock, it's kind of folkier, more abstract moments. There's a bit of chipmunk soul as well. So there's kind of like high, like pitched up vocals. On one of the tracks, which is actually really cool. So you heard a little bit of that ambient interlude at the end. I think they have that at the end of quite a few tracks, and I think it's designed to try and make the jumps in genre feel a little less jarring, a little less jolting. I don't think it quite works because they still feel jarring and jolting, but I think all the way through, she's really, really good at doing those different styles. And the songs are robust enough that it doesn't really matter, in my opinion. And I think the production this time around is a kind of step up as well. If it feels a bit kind of slicker and a bit more radio friendly this time.
Oh, that's definitely where I'll pick up from. Like the production on this one is like really, really good. And we had a track from Jamie on some time ago, I do recall. I don't remember it making a massive impression on me. I just thought it was good. Like it didn't blow me away or whatever. And my first listen to this What Now by Brittany Howard, I thought this is gonna blow my socks off. And the more I listen to this particular track, I'm gonna get more swept into it because it has many, many of the things that I like, right? So it's like it's pretty much a straightforward like rock pop song, basically. It's got a kind of really, really interesting guitar sound, which is reminiscent of St. Vincent quite a lot. It has a touch of the Lenny Kravitz around it, where it's like got a kind of soulful element, although it's basically a kind of rock song. And I like the like insistent bass guitar that's kind of pumping away in the background. Her vocal and guitar playing simultaneously is amazing, like flat out fantastic. I love when she's like sort of, it's not quite harmonizing because she's playing basically singing and playing the same note at the same time, but when she does that and she goes down the neck, it sounds so, so, so good. And like you said, the production values really have come up a notch as well. So like every sound on here is phenomenal. Best instrument on this, in spite of her amazing guitar playing, is her voice, which is almost like in the chorus, it's almost got a kind of like a touch of like the sort of screamo kind of like stuff just as she enters the chorus, has a sort of metally thing.
Yeah.
And then her voice can be sweet and her voice can be, you know, all sorts of things as well. So it's really, she's a bit of a contortionist, I think, when it comes to like musical styles, even on this fairly straightforward rock song. My only criticism of it, and it's become apparent over multiple listens, is this song is basically 4 minutes and it should be three. This should be trimmed. I think there's a section towards the end which is particularly baggy. And by the way, I'm not including the bells at the end. I mean, that's just whatever, right? But I mean the actual song itself.
Yeah.
There's a section towards the end after a chorus where there's just a sort of a guitar solo, but it's not front and center. It's a kind of, I don't know, it just feels like this, it's just padding the track out a little bit, and I'm not really sure why. It feels like it should have a vocal over the top of it, or there should be like a more complex guitar solo or a more in-your-face moment of some kind. And it just kind of plods along. And every time I get to that part of the song now, I'm kind of like, because it sort of means the song is kind of over, but it hasn't stopped. So it's like, it's a really interesting thing. It's like the musicality of it is like 10 out of 10, but the actual sort of plotting out of the song itself is more like 6 out of 10 or something. So it's quite a weird, and by the way, I don't know where this rating system out of 10 just came from. I know we've never said that before, never gonna say it again, but like, do you know what I mean? It's like the songwriting aspect of this is really good up to a point, and then someone judicious, you know,
the arrangement
Someone did this and just said, right,
needs a radio edit.
Chop it right there. You know, so those are my thoughts. I really enjoy it, and I'm going to listen to the record. This is a follow-up one for me, for sure.
Good. But, she would say, I guess I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry, Ian. It's got plenty of attitude and FU energy, this track. And maybe that's part of it. It's just kind of like, you know, she's... does what she wants kind of thing. Maybe she wants it to be a looser.
Well, my pals will know that for the longest time, my most detested musical genre is singer-songwriter, because I just think, like, I just find it so cringingly self-indulgent. Like, that one person would say, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to play, like, the chord of G followed by A minor followed by C followed by G again, and I'm going to tell you about how much like I hate my mum or something like that. Do you know what I mean? I just find it so like cringe inducing, and there's only very, very certain ones I can take any of. So I find the whole sort of like I'm going to do what I like attitude strange when you're in the entertainment business, because surely you're literally trying to not just please yourself. And when it is just pleasing yourself, it's often very, very self-indulgent and silly. You know, Stonehenge and all that sort of stuff. So I I don't know. I feel like with just a judicious trim, this track could have just gone up a further notch. The section I'm talking about, it's not offensive.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair enough. But yeah, I would definitely recommend checking out the album. And I like the fact that she is like a soul artist now, as much as a rock artist. But she's a soul artist in a very kind of modern way. She's not your kind of your retro, you know, totally enthralled to the past. She is doing something new and interesting and quite diverse as well across her album. So yeah, I think she's an exciting artist as well.
And I'd be doing myself and everyone a disservice if I didn't say that you've made an excellent point there, which is this is someone who's trying to take disparate elements and do something new with them. Because loads of times we'll have had like people who are just, you know, producing something that is an identical photocopy of something that came out in the 70s. And I always say, that's really good, but why? Like, what's the point? Like, what is this giving us? This is giving us something genuinely different, genuinely new, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. So shall we go into the next track?
Yeah, man. So I think I've been left with the unfortunate job of pronouncing this track. Is that right?
If you have to, Ian. I feel like
someone's got to. You know what I mean? Someone's got to take this one on the chin. Right, here we go. So this is Dina Ugon with Jag Vil Ha Alt. Marks out of 10 for that. Now we're rating things out of 10.
6 out of 10.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Oh,
Okay, so meatballs, IKEA, Dime Bars, PewDiePie, ABBA, and now Dina Ugon are all things from Sweden. That's the list. I really like that, but I would struggle to say it's like, I struggle to say it's cool. Is it cool? Is that cool?
I think it's kind of pushing into that kind of Krangbin style of cool, that kind of international pop genre blending thing. That kind of cool kind of lifestyle music, almost, just something you can put on in the background. So I think in terms of that, it's cool. I was wondering if maybe this was something that you were referring to when you were talking about, you know, things that are kind of aping things from the past, because this is very kind of 70s, very kind of 70s AOR, kind of singer-songwriter stuff. I'm thinking things like, you know, Carole King or The Carpenters.
Fleetwood Mac as well,
yes. Yeah. So they describe themselves as the bastard love child of Eric B. and Rakim Fleetwood Mac, Turkish psych folk singer-songwriter Zelda, and Swedish folk pop artist Ted Garstad.
Eric B and Rakim.
I think like certain tracks have a bit of a kind of hip hop beat.
Okay.
To some of the drums and things, but yeah, I think it's kind of interesting that they put that at the front. I think that's them kind of maybe protesting a bit too much that they're kind of eclectic and cool, maybe.
Well, you've got a degree in English the same as I do, right? Did you ever, when you were writing your undergraduate essays, just stick a few references in that had nothing to do with anything you'd written at all?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. just feel the breadth, you know, look how wide read I am. Yeah. But no, I think they are a cool group, and this is a track from their just released album, Orion, which is their third LP and their third in as many years. And it's out on Playgroup Music, who are quite a cool label. And yeah, they're kind of growing a larger fan base with each release, I would say. So they hail from Stockholm, and then there's other members that are from Istanbul and Cali in Colombia as well. So I've got a quote here from the drummer. He says, "It's definitely a melting pot. We all have our own taste, but we all also have some common denominators as well." So they say, "We hear music from all eras and countries," and then they put it into the music that they make.
Yeah.
So it is very kind of smooth. It's got that kind of that radio-friendly sweetness to it. The other tracks on the record this time around, there's a kind of funkier lightness of touch to it. There's a little bit of kind of disco glitchiness to some of the tracks as well. I very nearly brought in a couple of tracks that I like. There's one called Det Lacker, and the title track as well, that are kind of examples of a kind of clipped disco ball funk thing that they do on this album that is kind of working in a similar lane to Krangbin. But yeah, I like this track, just that buttery bass, the sweetness of the backing vocals. And even though I don't know what they're singing, it does feel like it's got that kind of classic 70s pop kind of structure to it.
I'll tell you what they're singing. Exclusively vowels is what it sounds like. It's just, oh, yeah, oh, it's all dead smooth all the way through.
Well, that's exactly why I gave you a 6 out of 10 for pronunciation, because yours was really harsh and theirs was just so mellifluous.
Jag vill ha allt. I was more German than Swedish there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really interestingly put together track. It's obviously like super, super, super smooth, but there's like one or two strange choices in here, which I'm still kind of getting my head around. So one is, like, if you're listening in headphones, somewhere like away off to your left ear, right, is a tiny little acoustic guitar that's just insistently strumming all the way through. And it's really, really noticeably like there. And I'm just thinking, why didn't they just kind of shuffle that into the middle and just blend it in, smooth it away with everything else? I don't know is the answer. Not sure. And there is also like a really discordant bass note near the first bridge, and it comes back again later on as well. And it feels discordant. It feels deliberately discordant, of course. But for a track that's, which is like super smooth like this, it's just an interesting, it's an interesting choice. So they're obviously like not pushing many boundaries, but they are looking in a variety of ways, I think, to sort of subvert a little bit with what they're doing. So yeah, it's an interesting track. It has the most bizarre cover art, like maybe ever. It's just so weird.
Yeah. So, do you have to describe it?
I'll do my best, right? So what we've got here is it's a background of like pink smoke or pink clouds with possibly the most illegible font ever. It just looks like someone scrawled it in cyberpunk. And then you've got a sort of Victorian gentleman's portrait with a sort of green, you know, three-piece suit with a green tie. But his face is diamonds.
I think that's about as good as it's supposed to be, like a diamond or like a glitter ball. I think it expresses something about the album's mix of dreaminess, formality, and fun, I would say.
Wow. Okay. That you did a better job of like summing that up than I did. It just looks bizarre to me. Like, I'm all for like bold. I really like bold album covers and all that sort of stuff, record covers, because I think that's a good thing to do. But I would need like the supporting like blog to explain what the choices were here. I just don't get this one. The artwork, guys, the track itself, I'm very much enjoying its smoothness, though, I have to say.
Good, yeah. I think like they're one of those groups that if the songwriting isn't as strong, then the material can feel a little bit kind of flimsy and faint, maybe. But when it works like it does here, I think it's a real kind of starburst of yummy ear candy.
Wow.
And I enjoy it.
Good metaphors, man. You're bringing some strong metaphor work this evening. Right, okay. So now on to what we would maybe call a sort of podcast favourite. One of the records that this is a band that I think when we started like sharing musical influences with each other, this is another one which we kind of hit and went, oh, you like that too? Aye, I like that too. Because Grandaddy, for all that they're sort of like a sort of indie darling and have been for a long time, never really been that popular. You know, I don't know a lot of people who've really ever spent any time listening to Grandaddy all that much. Not saying they're tiny or whatever, but I mean that. You know, they're just not massive. So it's one of those ones where when we sort of like pointed at each other and went, oh, you like that as well? It's kind of like a little club you're in a way, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. So we've made passing to references, I think, to Grandaddy on the podcast, but we've not had an opportunity to talk about some of their music before. Yeah, we've often like referenced them in relation to the, you know, the Holy Trinity of Cosmic Americana that we've talked about before. Yeah. That was happening at the kind of turn of the millennium. So you had Mercury Rev Deserter Songs in 98, then The Soft Bulletin by The Flame Lips in 99, and then The Software Slump, which was the second LP from Grandaddy, and was just kind of rapturously received at the time. People were saying it was the American OK Computer and things like that. So it was a really kind of big, it was a big record for, as you say, kind of people in the know. Kind of blog rock before blog rock, maybe those kind of people would be into it. But yeah, I thought it'd be cool to just have an opportunity to talk about them as a group as much as talk about this new record.
Yeah. Well, let's give the record a shot anyway. So this is You're Going to Be Fine and I'm Going to Hell by Grandaddy.
In a plane nor a train, it barely was even a bus, but I made it here all the same, and darling, I done it for us over some beer some. I felt going to be fine, and I'm going to hell. It was 1 year ago to this day. Out on love, and now you're better off. But for me, it's not going so well. You're going to be fine, and I'm going to hell. You're going to be fine.
So that's Granddaddy with "You're Going to Be Fine and I'm Going to Hell." And it's almost as if the last 24 years can just sort of melt away, because it's very, very similar sonically to the Software Slump. Although there are a few little tricks up the sleeve there that I would say are fairly, fairly different. Few influences that are kind of new. I really like it. I do really like it. I can't not. It's real good. Real, real nice.
Good. Yeah. I think this is a decent record. I think that this is a good Granddaddy record time around. I love the Software Slump. As I said, I thought it was like a real kind of major statement when it came out. Also, I think the debut under the Western Freeway is terrific as well. Maybe a little bit underrated because of the Software Slump, maybe. Mm-hmm. But this features some of the kind of biggest anthems, thinking like things like AM 180, Summer Here Kids. But there's a kind of feeling that since then, maybe Jason Little, both as part of Granddaddy and Solo, has kind of maybe struggled to create another full-length statement that's kind of consistently inventive and engaging in the way that those records were. The third LP had its moments called Someday, but it was a little bit one-paced. But yes, then they kind of went away for a bit, and then since they've reformed, and more recently they've kind of returned to the software slump. So they played that album in full on tour, as well as Little releasing a re-recording of the record performed on a wooden piano, titled "The Software Slump on a Wooden Piano." So yeah, so I think they're very much in that kind of zone again. There's even like a little kind of video that accompanies this track on Spotify, and it shows a little in the studio playing and working, but the camera pans down on the wall and you've got a picture of the cover of The Software Slump. It's almost as if he's just reminding you that you're this.
I made The Software Slump.
Yeah, if you like this, then you might like that kind of thing. It's one of those kind of things. So yeah, so this is from their album that came out on Friday called Blue Wave. So it's pronounced wave, but it's spelled W-A-V, as in like a WAV file, I guess.
Yep.
And you've kind of got those kind of typical references to technology all the way through the record, but kind of updated for 2023 or 2024. So there's references to apps and AI and contemporary office spaces, as well as some of those kind of trademark Granddaddy themes of alienation and isolation, heartbreak and loneliness, about how technology, rather than connecting people, kind of leaves them feeling even more adrift, and how it kind of infiltrates and corrupts the landscape of the modern world. So it's all these kind of things that we've come to know and love about Granddaddy. But yeah, as you say, this time around, there are a few like different tricks. So they've talked about this album having like a consistent mood and tone, and there's a really kind of strong country aspect to this record as well. There's always been a little bit of that to his songwriting, but it's kind of front and center here. This is, they've said this is the kind of country record, if you like.
Well, yeah,
it
and
does have a lot even of those the kind title, of cosmic churches.
Sorry for interrupting, but even the title, like Blue Wave, suggests like bluegrass or new wave of bluegrass or something like that. And the track here is the track's a waltz as well. And apparently lots of the tracks on the album are waltzes. So it's a mixture of them like bringing in their sort of synthy kind of massive scope sounding tracks with a kind of very lilting, old-fashioned, old Americana style. They have always blended, I've thought, elements of indie and Americana really well with the sort of technology aspect of it. And that, I mean, that is what The Software Slump is really all about, isn't it?
Absolutely.
What we're all going to do as human beings as we move into the 21st century, it was always about that. I really like this track. I find this track particularly poignant because obviously the bass player founding member Kevin Garcia died in like 2017, I think. I know you know that. I'm telling the listeners. But I can't hear this track and not sort of think, you know, that there's some kind of reminiscing about that kind of thing. There's just touches and hints about that sort of thing. Not so on the nose as the title of the song being exactly that type of thing, but just other hints in the lyrics generally. And just the kind of, you know, slow, gentle nature of it, and the ponderousness of the whole thing. And that's really what I love about Granddaddy. I do like their moments when everything just slows down and it's almost as if nothing happens. You know, you think about the opening track of Software Slump. Yeah, opening track of Software Slump, He's Simple, He's Dumb, He's the Pilot, has a lot of space in it, and it's a lot of like a toy box piano that just kind of glitches and stops and then starts again, and then obviously then it expands and takes off and it's universe
coda that just goes on forever.
So they've always been good at knowing when to stop, and obviously there's a big pause in the middle of this track where sort of, I don't actually know how long it is, 3-5 seconds elapse, and then it returns to the gentle waltz. But it's got a nice build-up section. I wouldn't quite describe it as soaring, but it's going in that direction. And overall, man, it's good to have Grandaddy back. They are a real like unique band. There's no one else who sounds exactly like this, really. You know, there's people who do bits of this, but they've kind of cornered the market for whatever exactly this is. It's their thing, and they're really bloody good at it, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I had a feeling about that kind of like short ambient section in the middle. I was wondering if that was kind of depicting purgatory in some way. Like the kind of, he's kind of like on his way to hell, maybe.
Yeah, that's maybe.
That was my kind of feeling. And the kind of, when he reappears at the end, that's him just about to enter. But that, maybe I'm just reading a bit too much into it. But that was the kind of thing that I got to it. But yeah, I think there's something really kind of glacial, as I say, and elegant about this track, and quite affecting as well. There's buckets of pedal steel all the way through the record. It is quite a downcast and introspective record. There's very few kind of upbeat moments. There's a track called Watercolor that's the kind of the closest that they've got to a Crystal Lake style track on the record. But it's definitely the most complete project that they've produced in some time. And as you say, it's good to have them back in some good form.
Yeah, well, if they come to Glasgow, shall we make an effort?
Yeah, I think that'd be nice. Definitely.
Good. Okay. So that's good. Podcast favourite. And now on to something that I don't think we've ever spoken about before. Unless I'm very much mistaken. This is Yurinda, with Yuan Gang Dugong.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
Me,
What's that one all about, Andrew? See, the thing is, there are moments in that track, right, which are like genuinely, like spiritually, like uplifting, like you know, yeah, the strings coming out, this sort of stuff. And then there's other points when there's just a guy just muttering right in my ears, and he's making the sound that I can only describe as the same one that I make when I'm absent-mindedly making mouth music while I'm like building Lego or something. I don't want to say anything like culturally insensitive here, because I know that like this is like Aboriginal language or whatever, but like I don't know what to, I don't have a clue what to make of that. I feel uniquely unequipped to review this track.
I know what you're saying. I've been really quite moved listening to this track over the last week or so, and listened to the album as well. So yeah, I felt compelled to bring it in, and I just think this project kind of deserves some attention to be. So I like to be shone on it, shall we say?
You listen to something like that and you go, right, I know what will confuse this idiot this week, right? Is we'll put something in that he's just, yeah, has no idea about, and he can't comment.
Not at all. If anything, I'm disappointed when it doesn't totally, I don't know, register, or it's getting you thinking. So it's doing its job. But
100%.
But yeah, as I say, like I've been really quite moved with this track this week. Yeah, I kind of. I'd prepared some kind of closing thoughts, but maybe I should kind of start with that. I think like the album is fascinating, intellectually and emotionally stimulating, and just it's got a kind of real depth to it, this track and this record and this project, I think. Yeah. I don't claim to understand it all, but I just find it really, yeah, as I say, just stimulating. In a way.
Well, that's what I guess that's that when it's something so like so ancient that it's gonna like touch you in ways that you actually can't really explain. Because it's obviously a culture that, well, to the best of my knowledge, has no like relevance to you really. Like you're not like Australian or so you're kind of coming at it from a total like outsider's point of view anyway. And I think often, like, whenever we listen to anything, like when we've listened to like African music, or we've listened to even like, remember we had that Found Sound project from like a Scottish island, remember that? Whatever that was, I've forgotten the name of that. To an extent, the first time you hear something like that, it can just be kind of funny, like it's just kind of jarring because you're just not expecting it. And like, I don't know how they recorded the vocals here, but I mean, that guy is like super close to the microphone. He is like in your ear. So it's got that kind of like real like vibrational thing going on where he's like, you can hear like almost like the what's the big Australian instrument, didgeridoo? He's almost got that kind of like reverberation sound in his voice.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Very guttural. Well, the first sound that you hear is him taking a big intake of breath And then it's like he's like gurgling his breath and gurgling his sounds all the way through. But yeah, yep. It has got that reverberational quality to it. You're right. And I think the record is deliberately kind of jarring, and you know, some of the tracks are very strange. I was going to say some of the tracks are very strange, as if this one isn't, but some of them are even more strange than this, and experimental in terms of like discordant compositions and really kind of interesting percussive backing on certain tracks. And it's also got these kind of strange electronic production processes going on other tracks as well. Whereas I think this one's a little bit more that kind of, it's going for a kind of neoclassical vibe to it. It reminds me, listening to it intently this weekend, I got a kind of similar sensation to listening to Gavin Bryars' Jesus Blood Never Failed Me Yet. Don't know if you know that piece of music.
No, don't think so.
It's like a really remarkable piece of music. I'd recommend people checking that out. And yeah, just I think it's deliberately kind of the idea. We haven't actually said what this project is. Yorinda, it means now in the Butchulla language, which is the ancient language of the Aboriginal Australian people of Queensland. And it's a pairing of Fred Leone and Samuel Pankhurst. And Fred Leone is one of only three Butchulla songmen. So he's actually a custodian of a language. Imagine being a custodian of a language.
That's but, cool. You
know, this is a language that's only spoken by a handful of people, apparently. And the idea of this project is that they're trying to kind of keep the language alive through this music, as well as kind of celebrating it and celebrating the kind of the historical culture of the language as well. So it's Fred, who's working with Samuel Pankhurst, who's a kind of really interesting multi-instrumentalist and producer, who's done a load of like kind of theatre work. He's done a lot of kind of musical projects. He's done music with the funk group Hiatus Coyote, as well as doing instrumental orchestral work on the Bluey TV show, which any Bluey parents out there will. Yeah, which is a wonderful show, and it uses music actually in a really kind of interesting way. But yeah, he's done some work on that. So it's an interesting pairing. And then they've got Jake Miller to mix it, who's done work with Bjork and Arca and Yves Tumor. So kind of bringing in this kind of like, you know, cutting edge contemporary electronica in there as well. So there are certain tracks that kind of feel a little bit more like something that you would get on an Arca or Bjork record. And it's that kind of idea of mixing the traditional and the experimental, the organic and the synthetic. And it's kind of exploring, interrogating the Aboriginal connection to the modern world and the natural world as well, in a way that some of Bjork's more recent work has done as well. It's a really interesting project. This track kind of opens the record, and it's just a really lovely piece of music, I think, and just those increasingly sumptuous strings that come in, I just find them really, really moving. So the track's called, as you say, it's You One Gun Dugong. Are you familiar with the dugong?
Is it an aquatic animal?
It is, yeah. So it's an endangered sea mammal native to Australia. And I'd found an article with the headline, The Dugong, a huggable seagrass-loving sea cow, has a new best friend, drones. So they're kind of endangered, and the idea is that they've started using drones to track the population of the species. But I just like the idea of that. I can imagine Jason Little writing a song about a lonely endangered dugong befriending a drone. I think that'd be something that he'd be interested in doing a song about.
This is, by a distance, the weirdest song and review of a song we've ever done. You're just talking about like model aeroplanes tracking down dolphins or something. I don't know what's going on anymore. Can I make two quick observations, by the way? One is, right, it's things like this is the reason why your attic is absolutely full of records. Like, you're so into this, it's amazing. Like, I'm just sitting back, just blown away by your enthusiasm for this. Like, I just never saw this coming. I listened to this on my own in bed last night, and there's just like this guy just talking nonsense in my ears. And the second thing I was going to observe is that you set such a high watermark for these podcast playlists that you're like a little bit disappointed that I've not just gone, "This is a genius, man. This is amazing." But it has landed with me. Like, it actually has landed with me. Like, I get the. As I said, I think I said clever stuff earlier on before I started laughing there, but it does give you an immediate kind of primal reaction. Some of that is laughter because it's a bit odd to the sort of, you know, Scottish guy that I am. But yeah, I get the guttural vibrational sense of it all, and I get the sort of connection to the history, and I think it's fascinating. Yeah. Guess custodian is like a real language, mental.
Yeah, bananas. Absolutely. And I think there's just a kind of deep melancholy to this track as well. Like, it's really beautiful, but yeah, just quite kind of heartbreaking as well. So yeah, I just wanted to, as I say, just kind of shine a light on this week. And I think if people could like just set a bit of time aside and just dedicate it to listening to this record, I think it's 32 minutes long, the album.
I think that's yeah. Good to you, man. I think like it's unlike anything they're going to listen to this week for sure. And if your choice is, say, like, I've got 5 minutes to listen to a track, I'm going to listen to either Yurinda or YG Marley, then I would say there's only one Aborigine way to go. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's only one didgeridoo thing to do. So yeah, nah, man, it's a strange one. I can't say it's not a strange one. It takes you completely by surprise, but it's so interesting. And it's like, I think a good touch point, I'll say it again, is that Found Sound project from the islands. I wish I could remember what that was called. We reviewed it like 2 years ago.
Yeah,
and we were both
Aaron Sood.
It is Aaron Sood. Like that's exactly right. Yeah. It is Aaron Sood. And it's Christ knows how you remember that. I have no recollection of these things. But like, we were both gushing about how like it's like this tiny part of Scotland, and he's like captured this thing, you know. And there's an element to that's this, but this is like an Australian thing, but it's actually much bigger and broader and more Australian and more ancient. So yeah, I don't mean to diminish it, but I mean it is kind of weird.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool, man. Right, if I don't stop somebody talking about this song, we'll be talking about it forevermore. So good playlist this week. Very, 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 very diverse. All over the place. Yeah. We started in Africa, and then we were off to America, and then Sweden, and then back to America, and then a wee bit of Antipodean flair to finish us off. So nicely selected bunch of tracks, my man.
Good.
So I guess that brings us round to our final word, the final section of our podcast this week, where Andrew, I was going to say takes something down off his shelf, but I guess it's now reaches around in a box of oven chips and finds something from the archives. And he makes a connection sometimes loose, sometimes tight, between something that we've listened to this week and one of his all-time favourites. And I would like to say, thank you so much for welcoming us back to the world of podcasts. And we've been away we've been getting lots of listens, so we do really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Keep listening, keep recommending it to your friends, keep messaging us, and we'll do our best to respond and to chat. If you feel like you can support us financially for this podcast, you're probably wondering, like, am I able to do that? And do you know what, Andrew?
What, Ian? Tell me.
They're completely able to do that. In 100% a legitimate way. Just take yourself along to www.buymeacoffee.com/weheardwonders, and just for the cost of a couple of lattes, you can keep this podcast running ad infinitum. Okay, that's enough filibustering. So, Andrew, the vinyl word, over to you.
Thank you. Yeah, so it dawned on me this week that we've done 80-odd episodes of the podcast at this point, and we've still never played a track by Queen Aretha, who's just one of my absolute musical idols. I just love Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
So clearly a significant oversight, and I realised that there was an opportunity to put that right this week. So we had the Brittany Howard track, What Now? And we also had Yorinda that we said translates as Now. So that leads me nicely to the 13th studio LP by Aretha called Aretha Now. So a wonderful record from 1968. Opens ridiculously strong with a 1-2 punch of Think into a Say a Little Prayer. It doesn't really let up from there. So, yeah, pretty decent. 10 tracks dispatched in less than 30 minutes. I've plumped for her heart-melting reading of Sam Cooke's You Send Me, which to me is just the sound of romance. I just love it. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Excellent choice to finish off the podcast this week. I thought you were going to say you'd found her, Aborigine records, and we're going to listen a little bit of that. But unfortunately not. It's just Aretha Now. So that'll have to do. Okay. Well, Andrew, pleasure to podcast with you again this week.
Andrew, sir.
And see you next week. I guess it will. So see you next week. Bye, guys.
See you later. Oh dear.
This is one of those ones that's so genuinely funny. I want to leave it in. I really want to leave it in because it's so funny, but I would have to explain it.
Lost your volume as well.
Fuck me. Right, hold on.